Now, you flew, what, 100 missions in Korea in the Mustang?
In the Mustang, 100 missions, and then chose to go back to the Philippines to enjoy my overseas tour and got my first jet experience.
What was that like?
Oh, wonderful, because you could go, we didn't have that much thrust at the time. You could hold the aircraft on the ground with 100% power, but release and be up at 20,000 feet a couple minutes later was a real thrill.
But what was the jet?
The F-80 Shooting Star, and also it's my first chance to be a command, and I commanded the unit for 2 years.
What was the attitude of the pilots and the entire staff of the squadron under you as the squadron commander?
Well, fortunately, we got along well, being a pilot and a maintenance officer, but the camaraderie that we had as fighter pilots, a little hard to beat. Our story is, we're the boys of the 44th, who in the hell are you?
One story, tell me about Frank Borman. When you were at Clark, Frank Borman, who's become rather famous, in astronaut world, but yeah. What was your experience with Frank? What was so significant about that?
As I say, I was commanding the 44th. Frank was the second lieutenant and had been assigned in the command. He did some work for headquarters for a period and had come down to the squadron to, I think we were planning for being able to build up support for moving transport. He was assigned to do that type of thing. But he had had a problem and the flight surgeon and had been taken off of flight status. And the flight surgeon wasn't helping because he said he didn't have his records. So fortunately, I was able to get with the flight surgeon and say, if we take him up, give him some flights and so on, you monitor. And it worked out. He got him back on flight status. So Frank and I have been friends ever since.
The fact is, Frank Borman credits him with saving his flying career, which is pretty neat, for sure. Back in the States, when did you come back and become a base and or wing commander in the U.S.,
well,
mainland?
Well, that's interesting, because for many years, after the Air Force integrated and closed Lockburn Air Base at that time, 1949, and we were scattered around the world, I guess, like doors open at times. I had the command, other commands overseas, but not here at home. But in 1972, we got commands overseas that we weren't getting here at home. But when I became commander of Richards Gebauer Air Base and the 1840th Air Base Wing in 1972, that was the first stateside assignment at that level in the career since the closing of Lockburn Air Base. Well, that was the Air Force attitude, and of course they led the country in the integration of military facilities, but use people based on training and experience and where needed, not their happenstance of birth, and using their money the right way, because segregated base limited them the ability to sign and grow like they wanted to. So that's what brought about the change.
Good. Going to Vietnam, and you had all this experience as a commander here in the stateside, and then Vietnam hits. What was that assignment when you get a command assignment there?
Well, I always liked working with people, and of course, my experience, besides just flying in the material and support area, was a great, great opportunity, and one that I enjoyed because I liked to work with people, and the attitude of accomplishing the mission, focus was there, couldn't beat it.
How'd you like flying the F-4?
F-4 was fine, but you know, technology is what it's all about. I got an F-16 ride after I retired, and somebody said, how do you compare the F-4? I said, you don't. But again, technology is a key to our advancement program, and I think, unfortunately, too many of our schools aren't giving that knowledge to our youngsters to be prepared for the future.
Amen. George, Vietnam, you had earned, what, two engineering degrees by this point?
Yes, I got two engineering degrees in the service, yeah. Uh-huh.
And but you're back on act. You're back in the combat zone.
Well, they needed pilots in the 119, which is an obsolete airplane, but they made a gunship out of it for Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they looked for pilots, and I was lieutenant colonel then. I returned to the cockpit.
Right.
Now I hadn't flown for 7 years. They still drawing flight pay, but they said I must be ready, and so I got refresher course in 119 in the end of 1969, and got combat training at Lockbourne Air Force Base, still Lockbourne then, and ended overseas with my combat crew in the 119 gunship. Our base was at Phan Rang in the southern part of South Vietnam. But when he got there, they took my crew away from me and gave it to a low-ranking officer. Now, all the airplanes, the squadron was at Phan Rang, but all the airplanes were at two forward operating locations, one at Udon, Thailand, and one at Da Nang. And I became the commander of the detachment at Udon for about 3 months, and then I moved to Da Nang. And that's why I served as commander of the detachments over there, 119th gunships. And it was a good gunship, I thought. We had four miniguns out the side, but two 20-millimeter Gatling guns, that's six barrels, firing a large 20-millimeter shell. And they could fire up to 100 shells a second out of those six barrels. And we had 11 people on the crew, and the person who fired the guns was the pilot flying the airplane. Of course, you had the guns were fixed, and you had to aim the airplane. So the pilot had a gun sight right here, and you had a crosshair with the guns were bore sighted out so many yards out. And we'd fly at night, and the infrared operator would pick up targets, trucks, basically, and his crosshair would show up there, and the pilot had to get in the firing circle. If the firing circle was right, all shells would be, as you go around, in this area right here. And they would destroy any trucks in that area. And you have to get in what they call the firing circle. And the co-pilot had to maintain altitude, whereas the pilot kept the circle going and only gave 1 or 2 second bursts on the guns, because that's 100 rounds a second thing. And that could get any truck if you were aimed properly.
Charles, you look back on your Air Force career. What has this meant to you? George.
Well, it meant a lot. Well, my career is, I had three careers in the service. As a pilot, then I got maintenance, and a good portion of my career was maintenance when I got to SAC, Armament Electronics Maintenance. And I worked in maintenance on B-36s, which is the biggest airplane we have had. And then I went to Limestone, Maine, up there, but from there in 55, I went to Institute of Technology for 2 years and received a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering. And then I went to Japan for a good tour of 3 years, and then to New York, Plattsburgh, where I became a commander of an Armored Electronic Maintenance Squadron, and that's when they took my flight status for. Right. I got my flight pay, but I had to be ready to go back. And while I was there, the Institute of Technology contacted me to go to graduate school. So I ended up in 63, going back for 19 months, and received my Master of Science in Systems Engineering. So I got a full, and then I got a different career after that, because I went into Air Force Systems Command, design development of worldwide programs. I worked for that for 5.5 years. At the end of that, I ended up going back to the cockpit and into Vietnam.
Yeah. What's meant to me is the importance of us mentoring our young people for our country's future, and what's happened. And my own lessons, my son was told he'd make a good truck driver, but he got an aerospace engineering degree, became an airline pilot after some Air Force service, retired with over 31,000 hours. And now as an instructor for Boeing in the Dreamliner, the 787, and 777. But part of that experience, I can remember when I wanted to get out of military flying and go commercial, they didn't want me or women. It took some lawsuits to change that, but by that time I kept getting good assignments, and I say was still flying, so it's thing. But I think what's important and what I gained from that is how we mentor our youngsters for our country's future. And we need to all be about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Charles McGee and George Hardy.